Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of One Vision, the FinTech Fuse. This is Theo, along with Stephanie Foster, and we are your host for this episode. Joining us today is Melissa Tracy, an independent public company board director, an audit committee member, a FinTech board advisor, a former Fortune 50 senior executive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm so excited to be here. Like I mentioned, I have always wanted to spend time with you, Theodora, and you've been an inspiration to me. So I'm excited to be here.
Oh, thank you. I would say the same. Likewise. And I have to thank Steph for connecting us. Before we start, can you tell us a little bit more about your career journey? As I mentioned in the beginning, there were so many things, and anyone who goes through your LinkedIn profile, I think the first reaction was, wait, how do you do all that? Either you clone yourself or, I don't know, you have just immense ability to multitask. So tell us a little bit about how you get to where you are right now.
Sure. Well, so I am the oldest of four kids. My parents were immigrants from the Philippines. So I think part of kind of the multitasking I learned was being the oldest of the four kids and trying to kind of, both my parents worked and just trying to kind of make sure to take care of them as well as myself. Kind of fast forward to after college, I always had random jobs, by the way. So I was always, you know, in school and working or whatever. But finally, after law school, I became a corporate attorney for a couple of years and decided I didn't really like it. I felt kind of like a mechanic, not that there's anything wrong with mechanics, but like that clients only reached out when they needed something. And I always craved to learn more about their business and to be part of more of their business. And then, so then I moved to Arthur Andersen, which was one of the few places that would hire attorneys that didn't want to practice. So I was a tax consultant for them for financial services, some hedge funds, some banks. And then learned a ton there. And same thing, I realized, oh, as a tax consultant, you're still kind of like a mechanic. They only reach out to you for certain things. And still, I was craving kind of to learn more about the broader parts of business. And then it was the year 2000, which was the dot-com boom. And so I was fortunate enough to join a startup called AdAuction, which auctioned off remnant ad space in an online platform, which I still think is such a good idea. I was the director of operations there. And then it imploded like a lot of the dot-coms did. And then I was contacted by a recruiter on Craigslist, when Craigslist was still somewhat credible, to take a temporary position at a big bank called Wells Fargo. And so my initial reaction was, I'm never going to work at a big, boring bank. But I'll just do this for the next few months until I figure out what else I'm going to do. So I took the position, and then I realized that they had a lot of really cool things going on. And I had kind of started a role in product management at Arthur Andersen. And this actually, the role that was at Wells Fargo was a product management position. So I ended up joining them full time. I built their commercial banking portal. I managed a bunch of different other products on that portal. And then I ended up building their banking as a service platform in about 2016. And, you know, part of my story also that probably doesn't sound like it's part of my career, but I always have to include it is we had a middle daughter who passed away in 2009 from a rare malignant brain tumor. And she was about one when she passed. We learned so much from her, different things, you know, we learned, but the biggest of which, and this will sound probably cliche, but life is definitely too short and you have very little control over anything. So don't fight that. The reason that's relevant for me is I definitely remember coming back to work at Wells. And by the way, Wells was amazing, like just super supportive, but through the whole thing. But I remember coming back to work after she passed away and my approach to work was so different. There was like this clarity around what was important. Ended up engaging less in any drama that can happen. And I think everyone can probably identify with drama in the workplace. I had a lot less tolerance for BS. I almost felt like that experience helped me become a better leader just because it cut out a lot of noise. So Anyways, I eventually left in 2019 to spend more time with my daughters, particularly my older one, who was starting to show signs of depression and anxiety in high school. And it's probably a good thing that, because it was right before COVID started. So I just had realized it was important for me to be accessible to them. And so I had made, at the time, it was a really big decision to leave, but I left. And so fast forward, COVID, you know, gave me the opportunity to be obviously with my family, but also figure out what I wanted to do, which took a long time. And it helped me pursue kind of this board journey that I'm on today. So that's a little bit about my journey.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for sharing. As a fellow mom, I don't even know what to say. Losing someone in your family is always tough. I'm seeing little ones growing up and want to be there to help them, but I don't know about you. Like, I struggle between what should I do? How do I give them space to grow versus when do I step in? I do an awful job at it, especially during the 3 years we were home. The kids were home for 2 years, two out of the three.
Yeah.
And we were trying to homeschool. I have my own company. I was writing the first book. And you can see the kids were struggling, but they were little at that time. My daughter, she was third grade. And you can see changes happening, but you just can't quite exactly know what to do because none of us have been through any of that.
Right.
So amazing. Kudos to you for what you do and recognizing the need and spending time with the kids. I think it's amazing and it's awesome. And I'm still trying to find the right word as I'm talking, but kids do have a lot that they can teach us.
Yes.
I would be the first to say I was absolutely oblivious to how it is to be a working mother until I became a mother. And I'm like, oh, wait, why is it that you can't find help here? Why is everything so expensive? Why is everything so difficult? Because I grew up in Hong Kong and we were privileged. Both of my parents worked, but we had help the whole time. I had an amazing nanny that were with us the entire time.
Yeah.
And so it was just, I didn't realize all of the demands and the needs that women have to do, and especially in here. So, which leads me to the next question, because helping women break into the boardroom, of all the 5 years I've been running the show, I think you were the first one who is absolutely hyper-focused on doing that and doing a lot of work around lifting women up and breaking them into the boardroom. Share with us first of all, why did that become a mission to you? Mm-hmm. And what are some of the things that women need to keep in mind, or how do we even get started? That seems like such a broad thing.
It's super overwhelming, but it became my mission because my mom always worked, it was kind of this given that I was just always going to work, whether I was a mom or not. And hopefully I was going to be a mom. And so luckily I became a mom, but it was never a question that I was not going to work. And, you know, I think I'm not a very good mom when I'm not working. If that makes sense, because I need to, otherwise I redirect all that energy that I use in work to, I use it on my family and my kids, and it drives them crazy. So to be honest, like I need to work to make everybody happy, not just myself. So I did know that after I left Wells Fargo, as I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, if I should consult or be on a board, I definitely wanted something that was going to keep me engaged, keep me learning, keep me intellectually stimulated. And given my experience in financial services and fintech and technology, the easiest place to start was to see if I could find boards in that area. And a dear friend of mine, Charlene Lee, I was talking to her as I was kind of reaching out to people saying, you know, what do you do? And just trying to get ideas of what I should do. I told her that I was maybe interested in joining a board, and she recommended this board readiness workshop. And at the time, remember, this is like January 2020. So right before COVID, there were not that many board readiness workshops. And this whole concept of women being on boards and making sure there was diversity on boards was starting to just pick up momentum. And so anyway, she recommended a board readiness workshop that was hosted by an organization called How Women Lead, which has since kind of exploded. And they have a great mission, which is basically supporting women in any way in leadership. And you can, and one of the tracks that you do that is by helping women being on boards. So I took this board readiness workshop. I learned so much about being on boards. It was nothing than that what I thought it was going to be. And I ended up taking 2 more board readiness workshops just because I wanted to really understand like a few different perspectives on it. But theirs ended up being the best. And it really broke down the landscape of how to get on this journey into consumable parts, because it was super overwhelming. And it helped me put together a plan of how to pursue a board role. So I would say for anyone who's interested in being on a board, you know, the first thing is to pull together what's called a board bio that is not the same as a resume. I actually thought it was the same as a resume. I applied for a few board roles with my resume and immediately got rejected. And now I understand why, because it didn't really talk to my board experience or my advisory experience. It only talked about the jobs that I had. So pull together a board bio. There's tons of different services, tons of templates out there, but it's hard. It's a really hard thing to do because it forced me to sit down and think about not only review my accomplishments, some of which I had forgotten, but it also forced me to think, well, how am I ready now in this advisory mindset to actually help C-suite leaders guide their company? And, you know, especially on a public board, you have to really be careful. You can't actually do the work with or for your C-suite. Otherwise, your directors and officers insurance can get invalidated, right? You have to maintain independence. So you have to learn how to leverage your experience, help these leaders, but also sit on your hands in a way, right? You can't do the work for them. So that the whole exercise of pulling together a board bio was really hard for me. And it forced me to actually learn how to talk about myself, which I don't know about you guys. That's a hard, like, especially when I'm interviewing for something, that was really a hard thing for me to do. And I still struggle with it a little bit, but it forced me to learn how to do that enough to be able to interview with boards. And then pull together your board bio and then come up with a brief headline about yourself. So mine is B2B digital payment strategy focused on risk management. That took 6 months for me to pull that together with help. But it's hard to kind of sum up I don't want to say brand because I feel like that's overused, but your headline. And then the third piece. So it's pulled your board bio, your headline. And then the third thing is networking and just letting everyone you know you're looking for a board role and the specific type of company you're interested in. And that again was hard for me because I was like, I just want to let everyone know that I want any board role. Well, in reality, you really don't, because there's certain companies you align with, there's certain companies you don't. Different boards have different cultures, even separate from the company. And it takes time for you to really figure out what you're looking for. So all of that takes time. And again, the one positive thing of COVID is I gave me that time because everyone all of a sudden was just at home and networking and, you know, everything became virtual. And so it gave me that time. I was probably networking at least pure networking 10 hours a week, which might not sound like a lot, but like, that's a lot of networking for me.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. And a lot of what you say resonate, because I don't know how to talk about myself. I always find that very awkward. Whenever people say, introduce yourself, I'm like, I write, I talk, I ask questions. That's pretty much like, I don't know how to tell people what I do. Even as recent as 2 days ago when I was traveling, someone was like, so Theo, just tell us, like, you know, what do you do? I'm like, I don't know. I can't tell you what it is that I do. I mean, I feel like I'm always busy, but okay, what do I do?
Well, they made us do this exercise where they said, go to your friends and your peers and ask them to describe you. And I was like, oh, okay. And it made me realize, like, you just have this different perception of yourself versus other people. And so that was super helpful. just to give me words to use.
Imagine if I asked the kids that. Oh my God, that would open a...
I did not ask my kids. I was smart enough not to ask.
You're smart, but I like the pointers that you were talking about. I think of all the ones, the first one would be hard, reflecting on what you do, because I feel like we're always juggling so many things. Yeah. It's easy to forget what we have done. But I think that the networking part, I wouldn't even know how to get started. I have a hard enough time doing it in real life, let alone... Don't believe in anything you see in social. That's what I always tell people. You see a lot of selfies and stuff, but people who know me know what I do. I take the selfie and I run and hide. It forces you. It changes you. I don't know. I don't even know what to say. I do want to ask you something because of what you just talked about, your journey and working with Wells Fargo. And, you know, rediscovering yourself, looking for your mission, all of that stuff. One of the things that also stand out is that you also advise fintech. Now, fintech is such a term. I forgot who we talked to, Steph, but we said, you know, can we just like banish it? Because come on, there's no financial services without tech. You can't use pen and paper and start adding stuff that makes no sense. So there's always tech. Infin, you can't even differentiate which one is a startup or not anymore, because that's getting really hard. Is PayPal startup? Not really, but you know, we still call them startup. But of everything that has transpired in the last two decades or so, what are some of the most exciting innovations, if you will, that you'll be like, oh, this is cool, I can get behind it? And where do you think we might be in the next few years? Crystal ball moment.
So the one thing I will say about fintech or financial services is like a lot of core functionality moves really slow, unfortunately. And so things like ACH, right? That, I mean, whether we like it or not, that's fintech, right? Because it's electronic movement of money. But think how long that's been around. And then we have wires, which is immediate. And now we have all these real-time payments, right? Like FedNow, RTP, which are really exciting, but it's really funny how, oh, by the way, and we still have checks. Like we still have checks. And we've been saying literally for 10 years that checks are going away. And guess what? They're not going to go away. Like they're literally not going to go away. At least not in the next 3 to 5 years. So ACH is still going to be around. Wire is still going to be around. Now we have RTP, which is amazing. But RTP, and FedNow, all those type, that exact specific type of payment method, it's really, we have to wait till not just adoption happens by the users, but everyone's infrastructure has to change. And that takes so long, and especially longer for banks to actually, you know, get those projects scheduled and get them accomplished. So unfortunately, one of the things I am excited about is real-time payments because I'm in B2B. I think that is so helpful for businesses as they figure out their working capital and manage their cash flow and try to figure out, you know, how to optimize their cash and figure out what's left over at the end of the day to use for investment or for mergers and acquisitions. Like RTP can be so powerful for that. But only until everyone can use it. And not everyone can use it because not all the banks and all the providers have the right infrastructure. So I am excited about that, but I feel like it's going to take longer than 3 to 5 years, unfortunately. The other thing, and so I'm looking, I mean, the other thing I'm always excited about is entrepreneurship. So I think entrepreneurship and startups are super critical to our society, to our economy, because that is the only place that innovation happens. All the big companies, as much as they try and want to, they don't, a lot of times don't have the right environment to like experiment, fail, learn, and do that over and over and over again. And startups and entrepreneurs that's the place where it happens. They're the agents of innovation. And all that innovation, like, the one thing I do like about the US these days is that we are so lucky to actually foster entrepreneurship. There's not a lot of countries that can do that. And so we are very lucky to do that because that's our biggest source of innovation. So I'm excited about entrepreneurship. And having said what I said about RTP, I'm looking for, you know, like startups and entrepreneurs can take RTP and make it much more abundant, isn't the right word, but pervasive in our payment system. And so I'm excited to hear like and work with fintechs that do that, because that they're gonna make the move the needle on that. Two other things I'm excited about, and this will sound kind of cliche also, but you know, AI is super exciting and scary, obviously. But again, like, and this sounds super dorky in payments, but like AI can totally help businesses figure out more quickly, again, how to manage their working capital to make sure that, you know, their businesses are still running day to day, and, you know, can help them to determine when they should pay their bills. Cause that's a whole science in and of itself, is the timing around paying bills and when and how to invest any leftover cash they have, or when and how much to reinvest into their business, or for, or have to hire more people. So I think AI is going to, there's going to be a lot more than even now, startups that are going to use AI to help businesses do that. They're not as sexy as, like, you know, the other types of AI use cases, but I think they'll be really critical. And then, you know, I think it's funny, but I'm excited about this whole concept of pay by bank or account to account payments. Like, that's been around for a long time, but it's just gaining a lot of momentum right now. I'm obviously biased because I'm on the board of Dwolla, but ever since working with ACH, I've always been like, why aren't we just moving money from account to account? And we are, but we just don't call it that. So I think there's going to be a lot more noise and marketing, and everyone's going to realize the value of kind of cutting out the middle people, middle men, middle women in those transactions. A lot of small businesses, it's expensive for them to take credit cards. So the more that small businesses can use, you know, account to account for moving money, the cheaper their costs are going to be. And, you know, we see like Visa, MasterCard, all the card companies are trying to figure out, or are starting to provide pay by bank themselves. So they see the writing on the wall. So anyways, those are some of the things I'm excited about.
I totally agree, Melissa. I mean, checks are definitely not going away, right? Especially in B2B, like all the refund that you receive from insurance company or like your kid's school, it's always a check, right?
Right. And Steph, you know, just even in the community bank climate, like there's so many checks going on. I mean, even in the commercial community banking space, right? There's so many checks. They are not going away.
They're not going anywhere. And I know you referenced RTP and FedNow. I do actually have a couple of recommendations for you. I'm happy to share work with in that space that are doing wonderful things. So I'm happy to make that happen. I know you talked about how innovation happens through entrepreneurship, and that's a good segue into our next topic. So we all know that VC investment and startup is crucial for our industry, but yet funding for underrepresented founders, you know, continues to be dismal, and it seems to be getting worse, unfortunately, year by year. So what are your thoughts on this? Like, what are we missing as a society here?
Yeah. So, you know, part of my work is I advise some early stage founders of fintechs. A lot of them are women. I try to focus on women, but the one thing I've noticed is it's all about like word of mouth. And so whenever like, and maybe this happened because of COVID, because we all kind of like started working from home and stopped seeing each other at conferences. And we were all just left to kind of to do virtual calls with whoever we already knew in our network. But I just felt like all of a sudden the ability to be known or to make a company known got really harder. There weren't as many conferences, right? So there wasn't a lot of, you couldn't like make a big splash. Yes, there was social media, but, and I'm not a big social media person. I'm on LinkedIn, but that's it. But I just noticed the biggest problem was that all these great ideas like didn't, like no one was finding out about them. So part of the way I would help these companies is I would like introduce them to different angel groups, introduce them to people I knew in my network. Like I always said, if there's anyone in my network that, you know, would be helpful to you, let me know. I'll give you an introduction. I would introduce them to like whatever small communities I was in. So for example, I mentioned the How Women Lead board readiness workshop. They actually also have a fund called How Women Invest that's specifically focused on female founders. And also it's focused on the ability for women to learn how to invest. And I think the minimum investment at the time was super low. So like $500. So not only did it allow women to learn how to invest and to invest, but it also gave an opportunity for founders to kind of become known. And like that, their community has over, I'm sure this number is outdated, over 13,000 people in their community. And so for me, I just took it upon myself to just literally let everybody know as much as possible about whatever companies I was involved with. And then there's all these accelerator programs, right? And like, so connecting them accelerators. So for me, I think it's just getting the word out there about these companies, because there are so many, but they all need as many voices out there talking about them as possible. I also think I would also tell these founders, you know, whether it's you, part of your job doing this, it can take up a lot of time. So either you do it or hire someone to do this, because that's super important, especially around fundraising, right? You need to like, just let people know, get the word around. And I noticed the founders that did a really good job or were able to get the word out, like just had the most success with fundraising, with network, like with people, like with hiring the right people. So I don't know. I think that's an underestimated role or function or whatever. It's just creating awareness. And maybe that's called marketing, but I feel like it's a little bit different than marketing. But anyways, but yeah, so like, I just want to mention, like, there's all these funds that invest in only underrepresented founders, and they have low minimum investments. So there's, like I mentioned, there's How Women Invest. They have two funds. There's Hypatia Capital, Rethink Impact, New Majority Capital, Gangels, Beta Boom. I mean, there's so many, and they're all only focused on underrepresented founders, which is, I think, is amazing. So anyways, that those are my thoughts on that.
It really does go down to your network, right? And I know you mentioned earlier 10 hours of networking per week, which is basically a part-time job, but it's a difference.
And that was just for me looking for a board role.
Yeah. So imagine when you're looking for funding, right? And you're not a founder and you're building that network from scratch of all the folks who have the money that can invest in your business to help you grow and scale.
Right. Like Steph, even you and I think we exchanged some emails early this week about Fritch, right? Yes. Like, and look, and you had already heard about it. Like, that's amazing.
And it was through another woman.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and then I connected her with another woman who leads BM Technologies. And they're kind of in the same space. And so it's just like those, they might seem like small little acts, but I think they make such a big difference.
And it builds. So great example. Thank you for referring to that.
Sure.
All right. So back in 2021, Millicent, you wrote a fabulous article about your own self-discovery and how that resulted into a 5-step investment process that focused around investing in women. Truly inspiring. Loved reading that over and over again, but I'd love for you to share in your own words what that journey was like and what are those 5 steps in investment that
you Sure. Did. Now, first of all, you are so kind. I have to give credit to How Women Lead because they asked me to write this article/blog post. And my first reaction was, no, I'm really bad at this. I won't be able to do it. And they like encouraged me. And so I really give them credit for this article. So thank you for those kind words. Yeah. So, you know, this really was, as I reread it over the last couple of days, it really was kind of just what happened, I had COVID to thank for, because it gave me time to do all this. And the one thing I definitely remember saying to myself was, well, I have the time, so I might as well just say yes to everything. So, you know, there was an opportunity to join, like I said, this board readiness workshop. Sure, I'll do that. And then within my cohort for that board readiness workshop were like 12 other women. And then you would get to spend a lot of time with them and get to know them. And then they had their own communities that they were part of. And they'd be like, oh, we're part of this community. And then I would learn about it. And then I would join that community and kind of learn about it. So I was definitely kind of in this experimental, trying on different personas almost, if you will, to see if what would resonate with me. And, you know, one of, and again, how women lead played a huge role in that. And I realized, like, so that opened up me meeting other female founders, that opened up me learning how to financially invest in businesses, that opened up how to learn to join a board, and that also opened up how to mentor female founders. So all those things, you know, are what I learned. And before I knew it, that was like filling my day, all those different things. So should I talk through some of those things?
Absolutely. Okay. We'd love for you to.
Sure, sure. So like financially investing in female-led businesses. So again, because of how women lead, I was connected to a bunch of different women leaders, most of them were female founders. Actually, Theodora, I ended up meeting Jane through one of the communities I mentioned right after she had moved here. And I had also met a female founder who was had started a company that uses primarily female Salesforce to sell payment services to small businesses. And her mission was to target all the women that had worked, then had kids, but then were worried about coming back to work or their ability to come back to work. And I don't know if you remember the term returnship, that was kind of tossed around for a long time. So that was her thing. She was like, I'm going to empower women with returnships who've been out of the workforce for a while, and I'm going to help them figure out that they can come back to work. And so that just really spoke to me. And so I invested a little bit of money, not a lot, in her, but I also kind of gave her a bunch of connections. I introduced her to a bunch of people because she had never been in payments. And even though her business was payments, she basically, her focus was just getting the workforce in place to sell payment stuff. So that was kind of my very first investing financially in a female-led business. Then I learned about How Women Leads Fund One, called How Women Invest. And they did a great job of having all these, again, during COVID, having all these webinars teaching women how to invest. Because I have to say, and this is a little embarrassing, after 20 years at Wells Fargo, I still felt like I didn't know how to make investment decisions and what to invest, where to invest, how much. So I took a few of their like webinars on it. And I realized like I was just kind of in my head and I was overthinking the whole thing. But they made it really, because the one thing you're worried about when you invest is losing money, right? So they also made me realize, okay, if you invest in a fund that's invested in a bunch of different startups, that's definitely less riskier than just investing in one business, right? And so, and because of that, they also had a very low minimum investment because they wanted women to like invest a little bit of money and get comfortable with that and then track their investments and learn it. So that's actually what I did. I took their webinar, I invested in their fund, which again, their fund only invests in female-led businesses, and their fund has been doing great. Like, so they've started another fund. And then I also, that opened up to me learning about all these other funds. So now I felt like, oh, now I'm an investor kind of. And then the third thing was joining a board, right? Which I kind of already talked about. And during COVID, it was really hot to make sure all the boards were diverse, to make sure they had women. Luckily in California, right, they had SB 826, which basically required companies in California, public companies in California, to have a certain minimum number of female board members. I think it was half of your board had to be women. I think it's still an appeal. And then the NASDAQ came out, and also it wasn't a law, but they had a mandate that said you have to have certain number of female board members. So like it became like a really important and big deal, which was good. And which I have to say also helped when I started looking for board roles. I'm a woman of color. And I'd like to think that kind of helped me get a couple of interviews. Now I've gotten the question, well, what if they just wanted you because you're a woman and because you're a woman of color? And I actually used to worry about that, but then I was like, who cares? Like, it's just like if a friend gets you an interview at a company, they push you up to the top of the list and you're going to take that opportunity, right? So I was like, so now I say, who cares? If that's why you get in the door, you know you can do the job. So just get in the door. And if it doesn't work out, it probably wasn't a good fit anyway. So now I say, who cares if they want you just because you're a woman or just because you're a woman of color? Like, whatever gets you in the door, because you're qualified, you can do it. The first board I landed was with the Public Community Bank in Oakland, California, which I love, love, love. I love them. And then I also, again, through my networking, ended up finding early stage fintechs to sit on their advisory boards. And that's also been really fulfilling as well. Then the other thing, and this is kind of similar, the other thing I say is advise a female founder or CEO. I've kind of talked about that, but you know, not just being on their advisory board, but literally being their mentor. A lot of CEOs have a board, but they also have their own mentor who is different from someone on the board. And I think that's really important just to be that person especially for female founders, because we're all so capable, but like, we just kind of need that nudge. I don't know about you guys. It always helps when I have another female in my world that just says, yes, you've got this. So I think that's really important. And then mentoring, which again, I just talked about that, but you know, that's just really been fulfilling for me. I used to do that a lot at Wells, and for some reason it's different now that I do it outside of Wells. I mentor both men and women, and I learn a lot from them as much as they learn from me. And I know there's all this talk about how to mentor, how not to mentor, but I don't know. I just feel like everyone has their own style, and you're just there for the person, right? And the one thing I will say is at the beginning of every relationship with someone, with a mentor-mentee relationship, I always make sure to ask them, you know, what is it that you want out of this relationship? So that, you know, there's kind of, you're making sure to give them what they need. I do think that's important. But yeah, I mean, this whole thing became like this. I was like, oh, I'm doing all these things. And this is like my investment strategy in women leaders. And the best thing I think that, the thing that makes it feel really good is that I can talk about it with my daughters, because as they're growing up, I've got a 15-year-old and a 19-year-old. I'm trying to be a good role model for them, and hopefully this helps, but we'll see. Because you never know with kids.
I love it. I agree more. Right? I feel like I want us to just go on tour go around the country and tell this story and aspire other women to do what you've done. Because I think it's amazing and extremely inspiring.
You're so nice, Steph. Thank you.
I agree. And I like your point about mentoring. We all have our own style. Just be there, right? Yeah. That's the most important thing, is be there when they need you. We all need that someone. We all need that someone to tell us that what we're doing is this is it. We can do it. We need a little push. We need a little nudge. Or recently, I just need somewhere to vent. And I needed that too. So yeah.
It can just be, just to be heard. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Just to be heard. Yes, I like that.
I have to say that. So Barb, Theo, and I have a group chat on WhatsApp, and it exactly as we were just talking about, just having your own tribe of other folks that can relate to your lived experiences in our industry and our space. And, you know, we serve as peer mentors and friends to each other. So if we have to vent about something, like, that's the first place I go to is my WhatsApp.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Same here. Yes.
This friend of mine, dear friend of mine, and she's actually a speaking coach of mine. She just recommended this book. Okay. Get ready for the eye roll of the title. Unbound, A Woman's Guide to Power. So totally dorky title. It is so amazing about how it talks about just how women interact with other women, with other men. And it has this concept of your mistress group. So this author in her training trained in a convent and also trained as a dominatrix to learn about power. And so she says, you know, you need this group she calls it like your mistress group, But women that you can surround yourselves with, and sometimes it's not your friends, but you can actually experiment different ways of power dynamics. Anyways, I'm in the last like half an hour of it. I did the audio version because the author actually is the narrator, and it is fascinating, you guys. And I'm thinking about, so it reminded me, Stephanie, when you said like your WhatsApp group, your tribe, I was like, I think this is another tribe I want to start, because it's pretty cool, like the stuff that they talk about and the exercises they go through.
Put me on the list. I'll be there.
Okay. You should. Yeah.
I'm still digesting.
I know, like the dominatrix part. I was like,
and honestly, that's why I read it. Catholic school. I'm like,
I was raised Catholic, and I was like, what is happening in this book?
What is going on here? Okay, I might actually check it out. Before we let you go, one last question, and I love asking this because it's something that I think we tend to ask ourselves quite a bit too. If you get the chance to do everything that you've done all over again, would you have done the same thing, picked the same path?
So I don't know. I say this to my kids a lot, to the point they're sick of it. I say everything turns out the way it's supposed to. I think that also I learned that after my daughter died, right? The middle daughter died. And I really believe, as painful sometimes as it is, like things end up working out the way they're supposed to. And I think, you know, I never grew up wanting to be a banker or like being in B2B payments. Like that sounds so not sexy. I grew up thinking like my parents were doctors. They worked all the time. And I always wanted a job that gave me the work-life balance to be around, because I think secretly I was resentful that they weren't around. So somehow I chose to be a lawyer, which was stupid because that's just as busy. And I ended up not liking it, right? And then in between, and since college, like I, you know, did pre-law and I went to law school, like I've probably had 50 jobs since then. But all of them, I truly believe, helped me figure out what I wanted to, what I enjoyed, which in the end was product management. So I don't know if I would do it again, because I don't know. And maybe it probably still would have worked out. Maybe I wouldn't be in the same place, but I don't know. I think it just ends up the way it's supposed to.
I think my kids will probably agree with your kids. Every time when I say something, my son, he's the 14-year-old, he'll roll his eyes. He's like, here goes your life lesson again, mommy. but it's a teachable moment, my dear.
Yes.
Every moment is a teachable moment.
Yes, yes.
Yes. And so they are tired and sick and tired of hearing me say that. But I do agree with you. I've done a lot of different things thinking back in 99, 2000. I also did the .com things. Yeah. I was in the ad space also. Did that before it imploded and then started my telco journey all the way until I ended up running into fintech. And things happen for a reason. Things seems like things happen by accident, but I do think sometimes there is an invisible hand behind that puts certain things in a path and put things in cycle and in motion the way that it's meant to.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds way too romantic.
But I think it's true. I mean, like at one point I was delivering papers. I delivered papers, I don't know. And then I realized, I don't like to deliver papers. I could deliver papers.
See? I mean, you know what? Actually, you know what? Thinking fast forward, I don't think any of our children will be doing that, because I think that's when the robots will be flying, right? Wait, they don't read papers anymore. Never mind. All the papers are gone. So there's that. It's everything keeps changing.
Yeah.
And if there's anything we can learn is adapt and flow with it.
Yes, 100%.
Well, all right. Well, so thank you so much for joining us today. Steph, we need to take this on the road and we need to do this in person. What do you think?
You already know what my answer is, Theo. I'm down for a road show.
Oh, we need to do that. Just not in the, 7-minute speed dating in a hall of 3,000 people type. I can't do that.
Right.
Put me down for 4 people or less. I'll be more than happy.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's find ways. We'll need to match our calendar, but we'd love to meet you in person. And thank you so much for everything.
Yeah, thanks for listening, you guys.
I love make this.
It so easy.
No, this is awesome. This is awesome. We're storytellers, and thank you for telling us your story. And for the rest of our listeners, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of One Vision. We will talk to you next week.